Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cellular Healing TV. Hope you're having a great day. This is episode 103. We have Dr. Pompa here, of course, and we have special guest Dr. Sunny Ferrero. It's a really exciting topic today. We're going to be talking about food cravings and what's behind them and can they be trusted. So before we jump in, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Dr. Sunny, and then we'll begin with this exciting topic. So for 3 years thus far, Dr. Sunny Ferrero has been an enthusiastic professor of biology at Valencia College, Rasmussen College, and Florida State College at Jacksonville. She's taught a variety of courses ranging from human physiology to microbiology and has a particular interest in how all of biology fits together and how one can apply even basic concepts to figure out what really causes mystery diseases for which causes are not really known. Dr. Ferrero received her PhD in medical sciences at the University of Florida after getting 2 bachelor degrees at Rensselaer in biology and psychology, but it was only after teaching for 2 years and refusing to accept a minor medical problem as normal and uncontrollable that she began to do retal learning. One of her favorite hobbies is tasting new foods. Researching the chemical and medicinal compositions of food, and experimenting with the, quote, perfect diet. Thus far, her proposed model for such a diet is, 1, organic food only, 2, whole plants and whole animals as much as possible, 3, eat what you crave if the first 2 rules are being followed, and 4, to taste new foods whenever possible. So thank you so much, Dr. Sunny, for joining us. How are you today?
I'm awesome. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And Dr. Pompa, how are you?
Great. I love this topic. I mean, here we have, biology degree, and a psychology degree. I mean, come on, this could be the perfect combination, right? Was it last week's show? We talked about how our thoughts affect our biology, right?
Yeah.
How our thoughts, drive our chemistry, our physiology. So here we are. But the perfect person to answer a lot of these questions that I think most people have, Meredith, are cravings good, right? I mean, come on, women, when they're pregnant, start craving different things. Is that good? Are cravings in general good? Sunny, that's the first question I guess we ask is, all of our cravings good?
Not all of our cravings are good. It really depends on, on what kind of learning process has been done. With the type of food products that we have most available now, we're more likely to be learning that dopamine releasers, for example, actually make you feel good. But the problem is that very often those foods don't have the raw materials for making all the enzymes in the body. So you really need. So that's why you need more. Whole foods, as in whole plants and whole animals, whenever possible, as opposed to, say, a food product with just salt and fat in it, or almost just salt and fat, because those two things are triggers that there might be some nutrients in there, but again, historically, that's only true for whole foods, like a whole animal, has some fat on it with fat-soluble vitamins, so your body might really be after not just the fat for the calories, but the vitamins that go with it.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So basically what you're saying is that there's a place in our brain that says, okay, we want these two things that we know keep us alive, right? So, and there's this area that gets this dopamine rush. So things like sugar and fat and salt, I'm presuming, right? Sodium, these types of things, that will get this dopamine thing going in the brain, and our brain says, we like. However, those things, food manufacturers are trying to put those things in foods, right? And they don't necessarily have the other things that maintain life, but it gives the dopamine high? Is that basically kind of what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And on the manufacturing side, it gives the dopamine high, and behaviorally and economically for the companies, it encourages people to buy it. But
yeah.
Those triggers are cheaper compared to including all the nutrients. And of course, that's not true of all, of all foods, all products, et cetera. But
let me ask you this, and Meredith, you have great questions. So it's like I want to make sure we get to all this, but I get so excited about these topics. So Therefore, then, we can create these foods that have these things that we know excite the brain and, you know, be void of the things we need for good cellular health, you know. But these companies go, okay, we'll just put those things in there, and we get the rush, and now we literally become psychologically addicted or crave those foods. But meanwhile, we could be starving to death differently.
Yeah, and that's happening, and it even, you know, can potentially get worse because not only are we addicted to the triggers, but because our body hasn't taken in, you know, the complete package, all the vitamins and minerals, et cetera, the lack of those vitamins and minerals, for most of them, often makes the body feel run down and tired. But since a lot of those vitamins and minerals we don't have per se receptors for, our bodies, you know, haven't really learned where to go get them per se, and that only comes from the a lot of experience with having a good diet, unfortunately. So, you know, I don't just like to try new foods. I like to experiment with whole long-term diets. I can tell you stories about, you know, mainly eating greens for at least a couple months, et cetera. And that can tell you a lot about how you can use good cravings.
That was interesting because I read that, that you said you went on just greens for a certain period of time. You started, correct me if I'm wrong, you started craving yogurt.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So your body knew that it needed something else, and you got these yogurt cravings. I mean, maybe it wanted acidity. Just, I don't know. I mean, did you deduce what it was craving?
My guess was that because, you know, greens as a whole are often, you know, they often have a lot of alkaloids, a lot of basic chemicals in them. It could have been acid to balance it out. It could have been, you know, molecules that are more acidic to balance it out, you know, proteins, sugars, or certain proteins, certain sugars, something like that. Probably either sugar or acidity because I was also craving blackberries and yogurt. So, yeah.
But it's amazing. You know, I preach and teach something called diet variation. You know, not go out and eat pizza necessarily, but but you know, varying our diet and how, you know, really our ancestors were forced to do that, Professor, right? And you know, today we can just get caught up in the same eight foods all the time. So, yeah, interesting. So, Meredith, you had some really amazing questions, I thought, and you know, I do want you to talk about you well, before we got on air. You talked about a rat study. Where they, you know, it really, I think, makes your point in this area that we have the ability to seek out certain things, nutrients, but it's harder with others because we don't have the receptors. But so, you know, we'll get to that because I think it proves some other points. But Meredith, I know you have some great questions for Professor Sunny.
Well, thanks. Well, yeah. First of all, too, just to back up a little bit, I did think of kind of an interesting example as well when you were talking about whole foods and just parts of the foods being pulled out to eat that they, you know, would create imbalances. But I also think, too, just in regards to eating whole animals, so few people eat whole animals anymore and not just, you know, the muscle meat, but actually the organs and the skin. And I've gotten really into eating organ meats recently. Mm-hmm. And I just think that so many people are missing out on so many incredible nutrient-dense foods when they're not eating the entire animal. And is it true that people are really throwing their bodies out of balance when they're only eating the muscle meat of animals?
Great question.
Yes, absolutely. There's a couple of things to talk about. There are the vitamins and nutrients to talk about in certain organ meats that you normally, when you look them up, are mainly found in plants, or you know, most often talked about as being found in plants. And in terms of the connective tissue that isn't muscle meat, like the skin, you know, tendons and sources of the collagen protein. Muscle meat is mainly actin and myosin. Collagen is found elsewhere, but it's still a protein. And you know, I've just been teaching anatomy recently and ran across the statistic again that about 25% of our protein in our body is collagen. And yeah, we can get those amino acids from you know, other sources in our diet, but the proportions are a little off. So if we build collagen out of the amino acids that are in actin and myosin, muscle protein, our bodies are going to end up throwing some of those amino acids away, and that eventually goes out through the kidneys which, you know, works them a little bit harder, but we generally waste it. It's not as efficient. So that might, play a role in overall body efficiency. But especially the vitamin issue, a lot of vitamins are found in organ meats.
It's interesting that you say that because, you know, you think of the Hunzu people. You know, they would spend their summers eating mostly vegetables. The winters, they would eat, you know, they're mostly, you know, meats, you know, dairy, whatever that they, you know, obviously would last through the winter. And but they would eat the whole animal because, like you said, I mean, in the whole animal was, I mean, they were forced to eat the fat and the organs. They couldn't waste anything to survive the winter. And therefore, there was a lot of the same nutrients that are in the vegetables. So if they didn't eat the whole animal, they could become deficient.
Yes.
Yeah. That is really an interesting concept. Once again, you know, Meredith, I talk about this, you know, diet variation and how interesting that is. And I couldn't agree more, Dr. Sunny, you know, eating the whole, you know, animal, the whole plant, I mean, how important that is today. And I'm a big believer in ratios, fatty acid ratios. You know, people just taking fish oil. I'm a critic of that. I think that it works. It can work in an acute stage, almost like a drug, if you will. We can throw a lot of omega-3 down, regulate inflammation, but yet people staying on fish oil for lengths of time without eating fish. According to you, you agree with me, that throws us out of balance.
Yeah, because fish, while it's a rich source of omega-3s, there are, the unscientific term of a zillion other things in it. And also, guess what? Things that we probably haven't discovered yet. We're always discovering things.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, it's, you know, we look at a study, you know, where they throw a bunch of DHA to people and omega-3 and fish oil and, you know, it downregulates inflammation. You know, but does the study go on to say what happens when people keep taking it? You know, of course, you know, we know that it does cause omega-3 dominance, which has bad things happen in omega-3 dominance. So, anyways, I love that. I love that philosophy. I come from the same place. So, all right, you had another great question on there that I want to hear the answer to.
Well, I have plenty of them, but I was just thinking too, Dr. Sunny, when you were saying at the beginning that you were eating a lot of greens for a while and your body was craving yogurt. So, when you're on a whole foods diet, perhaps you can trust your cravings. But what about most of Americans out there who are eating a junk food diet, that are eating lots of, you know, pasta and pizza and chocolate and salt and, you know, having a lot of those common cravings because they're eating, you know, a diet that's crammed with grains and sugar? How are those cravings different? And clearly those can't be trusted as much, I would think, than if you were eating a whole foods diet. And can you speak to that?
Yeah, on a mainly food product diet like you just described, for one thing, their brain is probably mainly associating any craving with like a past pleasurable incident, such as just simply the release of dopamine. But you know, the problem is it's not doing anything else for them, and they're still going to feel physically bad, even if they don't realize they are. You know, they're going to have health problems eventually if they're really not getting the nutrients. And the cravings are not as reliable. You know, for example, MSG is a very tasty substance. You know, it contains the amino acid glutamate, and we have a taste receptor for that. Yeah. And I know I used to love Doritos. I actually would still love the taste of Doritos, but you know, but the problem is, you know, you're not getting any other nutrient, and you know, in higher than ideal amounts, any nutrient can be even toxic, which MSG has a toxicity level. So the cravings from someone eating a mainly food product diet, they're not really gonna tell someone where nutrients are as much as if they're on a whole foods diet. And even then, it's difficult enough. Like, I can tell you a story if you want about where I couldn't figure out exactly what I needed, but my best guess was actually omega-6s.
Tell
me. Yeah, tell the story.
this is when I was on, so there's a, I already told you the story of I was mainly on greens for a few months, and then I craved yogurt and blackberries. Actually, I did that at a shorter time compared to that, but a separate time, like a year later, I was on greens for a long time, and, you know, I threw in the yogurt and the blackberries, too, this time. But then I had a craving once, and the first thought that popped into my head was that it was a quote-unquote junk food craving. And I was like, okay, that can't be right. I need a specific, you know, plant or animal I'm craving. What is it? It's got to be something. And the first plant that popped into my mind was, or plant-associated food was, oh, I could go for corn chips. And I was like, okay, so maybe I need something in corn. And it gets better. I was like, maybe it's corn, but then I said, I always explore alternatives. I said, what else might fix the craving? You know, is it really something specifically in corn, or could it be something else? And I thought about it, and then I thought, or a whole bird. I could go for a whole bird. And I'm like, what do they have in common? And I know omega-3s and 6s carry up the food chain, and birds, even and especially organic birds, eat mainly, you know, things like corn. Yeah. And I was like, okay, maybe it's omega-6s. Can't really. I don't think it's protein, because protein content's kind of different. So, yeah, my best guess was omega-6s there.
Yeah. That's
did that work when you ate the omega-6s? Did that satisfy you?
Yeah, the most available thing, because it was almost Thanksgiving, I figured I'd wait for the family, you know, bird meal. But right away I had some, you know, corn chips. They were organic corn chips. It wasn't, you know, the most intact corn possible, but they were, there was corn in there. And yes, that fixed the craving. So yeah. I was like, I guess I over omega-3'd myself. Even the salad dressing even the salad oil I was using happened to be hemp oil, which is higher in omega-3s compared to olive oil.
That omega-3, omega-6 ratio is really important. I mean, our brain works, our cells work on that ratio. And when that ratio gets out of balance, our cellular fluidity is affected, you know, how our brains are affected. And there's been studies showing that it's only this specific balance of omega-3 to omega-6 that actually can change the brain. So just giving fish oils alone isn't the key to changing the brain. You know, it is that ratio that really matters. And it's a ratio that's just automatically found in balance in when you're eating these whole animals and plants, by the way. It's uniquely enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what about like these, you know, pregnant moms that crave chocolate? I mean, come on, what's going on there?
Well, when you said chocolate specifically, I can pick on that one. One thing I remember is, well, chocolate's very high in a lot of things, iron and copper, for example, and those are really important for making red blood cells. And of course, when you're pregnant, you have to make a bunch of stuff, including that. So, you know, so that's probably what it's doing. Yeah. But then, you know, I've had chocolate cravings before, but at the time, the funny thing is, the last time I had a chocolate craving, I actually had the best form of chocolate. I had whole cacao beans.
Yeah.
The whole ones are hard to find. The nibs are more common, but I would normally eat one every other day just to, you know, remind myself they were still there. But one day I ate like 20 in a row, and I was like, why am I doing this? And then I looked at the calendar. but anyway, but on the but pregnant women have a wide variety of reasons potentially for craving certain things. I know that sometimes they'll crave chalk. I mean, there is calcium salts in there. You need to build a skeleton, and even if they've never tasted chalk before, who knows what kind of association might be working? It's white. We, you know, look at calcium-filled things that are white all the time, so maybe it was the color that attracted them to it. So,
yeah. What about people who they eat dirt? I mean, they crave dirt. They crave, you know, odd things. I mean, there's a show that talks about these odd cravings, and I tell you, it goes far beyond dirt, even into borax. And I mean, have you seen that show? I mean, what's going on there?
Yeah, Freaky Eaters.
Yeah, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Sunny, help us. Like, what's going on there in the brain? You've got the psychology and biology degree.
Well, there's a few different things. Psychology and biology are so heavily tied, and on a lot of the cases of freaky eaters or picky eaters, it might be some psychological memory association that formed from an incident in their past. You know, that would be the more experienced psychological part of it. But I've also seen an episode that included someone who was very vigilant of their food. They were very picky, and they got genetically tested, and it didn't go into detail in the show, but compared to what they were expecting to find, this individual had an even more rare genome. They've actually never seen it before. So, certain cases can be genetically programmed. On the eating strange things like dirt, etc., certain substances like dirt do have essential minerals in them, as long as, and who knows, it to some degree it might be beneficial if there's no bad pathogens in there, or harmful substances like lead or something. Right. I know that eating of lead paint is an occurrence, and it's dangerous. But one thing that they've seen from, animal studies with cravings is that if an organism gets deficient in a nutrient and it's not obvious where that nutrient is, and, usually if there's no receptor for that nutrient, but they generally feel bad, one behavior that happens is they start exploring different foods, trying things out, and then the learning process could take a short time or a long time depending on how deficient they are and, how long it takes that nutrient to get used, but eventually they could hit a food that fixes the deficiency and the craving. I have another story that actually relates to a surprising craving and possible deficiency I had, if you want to hear it.
yeah, please. And then, that also talks about the rats, the study that you and I were both familiar with, is they gave the rats thiamine deficient diet, and they basically, had to. I guess they eventually gave them something with thymine, a feed with thymine. Tell the rest of the story, because I think it proves your point you just said. Then you can tell your personal story.
They gave them a choice of the thymine deficient food that they had been eating, which made them eat less and generally feel bad, And then they gave them a choice between that deficient food and actual thymine-rich food. And they eventually figured out where the thymine was. But since, there's no clear receptor for it, that might have taken a little bit of time. I actually don't remember the details. But there was that study or another part of the study or a different study that linked the thymine-rich food with the flavor of a spice. I think it was anise. And that helped them learn where the thymine was. So that tells you when we don't have receptors for something, our brain links other characteristics of that food to what makes them feel good from the nutrient. So that's another reason to retrain yourself with organic and whole foods, because that's the way the food normally is or should be anyway. And so once you do that, then cravings become reliable. Your brain could use features such as the flavor of a corn chip or a roast bird to say, that's probably where the omega-6 was. I doubt I can taste omega-6s.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so that's your point, though, is that certain nutrients like, thymine or magnesium, there's no receptor for it. Now, we have receptors for salt. We have receptors for glucose. We have receptors for all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the association. I mean, that even explains why people can eat dirt, because their brain's associating the dirt with the deficiency because they don't have a receptor for, say, copper.
Yeah, that might be a more exploratory thing if they've never tasted dirt before. That's my guess. But
but I mean, what I'm saying, maybe they somehow ate some dirt or on something, and then their brain associated. I don't know, made that connection.
Yeah.
So tell us your story. What was your story with that in connection?
My story relates to, well, actually, my story involves an essential nutrient that we do have receptors for, but for some reason my brain hadn't recently consciously linked you know, it is the problem. But somewhat recently, I was, you know, I was eating good food, and so I assumed I wasn't deficient in anything, but I was feeling unusually fatigued and kind of irritable, and just, and I thought, okay, maybe I need to eat something, but here's the problem, I don't know what it is. And then one day, I accidentally, or, you know, spontaneously, made a little exception to my organic rule and stole a couple of friends, well, you know, borrowed a couple of friends' French fries when we were going out to eat. And I liked them, and I thought to myself, okay, I know I don't need starch or fat because I'd been eating that. Is it the fact that it's hot food? Do I psychologically associate hot food with, you know, wanting a good experience that hot food gave me before? I wasn't sure. I also used a lot of ketchup, by the way. Then another day, I had some organic salami. Yeah, they do make organic salami. And I really liked that organic salami, but I don't think I was craving protein or fat. So I was, I said to myself, I think I was actually salt deficient. I started looking at all the food I had been eating. Sodium read 00000.
Right.
And that's really rare in this society, so I wasn't vigilant for salt deficiency. I just assumed I was going to get enough because I had salt at home, but the problem is I like never used it for a long time. But the, that was an interesting possible deficiency and a rare one. But yeah, it's easier to figure those things out when you're on a, you know, a diet you really are aware of.
Yeah. Anyway. Do we have receptors for potassium?
What about receptors for potassium?
Do we have them?
I'm trying to think exactly where.
maybe somewhere. But anyways, my question is this. It could it have been a potassium deficiency where your body will use sodium to maintain the amount of potassium? Just cure, you know, thoughts.
To be honest, I actually think it was sodium chloride or one of those ions because I don't know how much potassium there was on those French fries, and that was a go signal for me when I had those French fries. So
yeah, interesting stuff. So what's the psychology? I mean, you know, we're talking about some physiological needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you alluded to there's certain things in life that can create psychological desires, you know, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is, I know the psychology is tied to the physiology, and we talked about that, right? But, you know, what is some of the psychological addictions that people can have, starting with cravings?
Well, I mean, with regard to food cravings, it's any kind of association, I would think, between, you know, and... for example, if someone's trying to get away from a bad feeling, a psychological situational feeling or a bad situation, and they eat something that quickly triggers dopamine release or some kind of good neurotransmitter, they could associate that with a rescuing feeling or a good feeling. And then whenever a negative situation comes up again, they could use that. That could definitely happen.
Yeah, and Sonny, I know that people, when they come off of drugs, or let's use an easier scenario, smoking. They quit smoking, they crave something else that triggers the dopamine, right? Because the nicotine was firing dopamine, made their brain feel really good. That's the addiction. And now they stop, and so now they start reaching for more sugar, something else that really stimulates that dopamine receptor.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, is that part of the psychological craving addiction that can happen? Like, you know, that brain wants that stimulation, and there's nothing better than the sugar and the salts and the, you know, the things that really fire it.
Yeah, their brain's definitely looking for a replacement for, you know, that good stimulus. And the same is true with, you know, other addictions other than cigarettes. Whenever something good goes away, the most efficient
right.
thing to do is to replace it with something.
Right. Yeah. You know, and people are addicted. When I ask about why do you like the Diet Coke? You know, I'm on an airplane and people order the Diet Coke. You know, the answer is never because I'm addicted. The answer is never because I like it more. The answer is. You know, the answer is never to lose weight. The answer is, oh, I like this now more. You know, their brain, when they started it, they didn't say, boy, I like the taste of this over the regular. No, it's always like, gosh, the aftertaste, right? You know, but then these chemicals are excitotoxins, you know, meaning that they excite those receptors that we're talking about, create the dopamine rush, you know, and then therefore we want that Diet Coke or whatever it is. I mean, these new chemical excitatories stimulate what you said, that, you know, what does MSG stimulate? It's a glutamate receptor, which is the most stimulating receptors in the brain. These chemicals in food now are targeting that in our children, and therefore now they're addicted to those chemicals in foods, and their brain finds those darn drinks in foods that all have these chemicals in it. So it's gone beyond just sugars and salts. It's a new day and age with these chemicals that stimulate these receptors more than the sugar does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can. Sorry, go ahead.
No.
Oh, I was going to say, with a problem like that, I believe it's possible to actually replace those conditioned cravings with good ones, because you know, I've gone through a lot of diet experimentation. You know, I find a new favorite food or a new favorite drink, and I stick with it for a while, and then I find you know, another novel food or drink, or a bunch of them, you know, and I get conditioned to having such and such for breakfast, etc. So those things can be replaced in the form of, organic whole foods, I think.
Okay, so I have a client and friend who's addicted to Diet Coke. Or, I'm sorry, Dr. Pepper. Mm-hmm. Dr. Pepper is the only thing that works, okay? For that person and for the people out there that have their addiction, whatever it is, how do we break it? What's the answer?
I would say, in combination with exploring alternatives, if cold turkey doesn't work, I mean, I would say slowly reducing that addicting substance, and that, you know, that might work better. And in terms of you know, not increasing intake of it via a relapse, so that's my main tip for that.
Okay, but then, I mean, so great. Let's say we can somehow go, you know, cold turkey. Is there any, you know, doing anything in addition to? Because what if they get sucked into another craving, therefore addiction?
Oh, like a different unhealthy one?
I'm just saying, maybe, okay, great. She gives up Dr. Pepper, but could she end up on something else very quickly? So cold turkey here, but could she end up on more sugar?
Yeah, that's why I think that, you know, can be avoided if you make some guidelines for yourself or stick with, say, you know, the guidelines I put up for myself. Like, for example, the first thing I did when I discovered all the harmful chemicals in non-organic food, unnecessary antibiotics, glyphosate, the herbicide, etc., the first rule I said for myself was no foods that have extra antibiotics in them. Then when I discovered you know, other things, I said, okay, all the legal organic criteria make it so that I think I want to go pure organic. And I was picky about it, you know, until at least I found all the basic food groups offered an organic form in the store. I the only things I put in my mouth were certified organic things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the French fry example I gave is a rare exception. That only happens about once a year, in terms of like one mouthful, and usually it's only if I feel I need to put something in my stomach. So, you know, I'm not paranoid of non-organic food, but if I have a choice, no, I'll stick with it, with organic food. But no, I think that's a good guideline to use. And also step number two, you know, as long as it's a whole plant or a whole animal. For example, if you think you're going to take up a sugar addiction, if you have a sugar craving, go for a whole food that's rich in sugar, and the, you know, severe addiction to it may not happen.
So what you're saying is you can start to, if you start to gravitate to the better foods, right, the whole foods, you can then, your brain will start to pick up that, you know, these things are here, and you almost even crave those things eventually. So if you give up something, this is the time to move to the, you know, the better diet, the, you know, obviously the whole food diet, if you will.
Yeah.
So, and that by doing that, you're making better associations here as you're moving away from the association here with the negative food. So if you just try to get rid of the negative food and not switch to whole foods, you could be in trouble.
Oh, yeah, because then you have nothing to eat.
Well, and you have no associations. Your brain is not saying, okay, get it over here now, right? Yeah. So then you're going to end up gravitating to another bad food.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You almost have to do these things, you know, simultaneously. So, and by the way, yeah, we are haters of glyphosate because of what it does to our gut, what it does to our brains, and our good gut bacteria. So, Meredith, you had some other great questions that need to be answered.
Yes, perfect little interlude as well with the glyphosate. I'm just wondering, like, how the state of our microbiome is impacts our food cravings. Can you speak to that?
Well, our little gut bacteria need to eat too, and you know, different species survive best off of different foods. And for example, we are used to having, or we should be having, a certain amount of fiber in our diet. Our good gut bacteria can eat some of that fiber, and that's what feeds them. But if we're eating more sugar than fiber or cellulose, then the bacteria that survive best off of sugar will predominate. And, you know, our bacteria have been shown to synthesize certain certain neurotransmitter precursors from scratch, and they've actually been seen going up the vagus nerve directly from the gut. So somehow they might be directly influencing our cravings based on what they want. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, just to, you know, in review, so our gut bacteria, our microbiome can influence cravings. So if you have a bad microbiome, that could start craving bad foods. I know this from cravings. You know, people that at the cellular level are sugar burners only, with the hormonal inability to use fat for energy, because your cells can only use sugar, fat, right? Mm-hmm. So they crave sugar because otherwise they have to break their muscle down into sugar. Your body doesn't want to do that. So it would rather give you a craving for the thing that needs to make energy, because it really is not efficient at using fat. So therefore it drives a craving that way. Our microbiome can drive a craving. Deficiencies can drive cravings. So, you know, psychological things can drive cravings. So there's four things. So, all right.
Well, and just what you said about the craving or the deficiencies as well, I'm wondering, you had spoken to this a little bit earlier, how chocolate might be connected to some deficiencies, but or the craving for chocolate. But do you have any other specific cravings that you associate with specific deficiencies? Specific foods.
From personal experience?
Or just your research.
Okay. Well, let me see. I made a little list here, but I hit some of those stories.
Chocolate, I know you had said, I forget what you said, it's associated with a deficiency, but I was thinking maybe a magnesium deficiency as well.
Oh, yeah, there's also that.
Right?
Yeah, magnesium, that happens too. The only other thing I noticed, I actually couldn't figure out exactly why. It might have been a zinc deficiency or something, but one time I was craving specifically, on that note, it probably wasn't just a zinc deficiency. I still can't figure it out. I was craving bivalve mollusks, clams, oysters, a squid. I didn't want a squid. I didn't want a steak. I didn't want a fin fish. I wanted clams or oysters, etc. So, but that's still kind of a mystery.
Bivalve mollusks. Only a biologist would describe it.
I can't think of any others off the top of my head that I've had.
But you don't know of any other specific food cravings that are associated with specific deficiencies? I was just curious about that.
Just kind of drawing a blank here. Cravings, deficiencies. Mm-hmm. On the mollusk example, I know that if someone craves meat and fish, etc., it could be zinc, because oysters, etc., are high in that. That's an example. And actually, on second thought, that I might have been craving zinc, because even though I didn't want steak, etc., oysters are higher in zinc, so my body could have been going for that. If you, my guess is there may be some indirect way to detect a folates deficiency. Someone could crave greens. I've actually done that before, not severely, but because I always have greens. But the subject of folates is interesting. I don't, not a lot of researchers know that, or you know, put in their papers that folic acid is just apparently one out of many different chemicals that are classified as folates. I don't know if you have any questions about that.
What do you mean by that? I'm not sure where you're going with that.
I read that there are several different chemicals that are classified as folates, but they're all different, and they all appear to work together to appropriately synthesize DNA. And I say that because there have been papers done on folic acid overdoses, or you know, higher than normal levels, actually causing cancer. But yeah. You know, at a certain level, they can prevent it. And you know, there has yet to be a documentation of folates from whole foods causing a problem.
Yeah, right.
So I just thought I'd mention that.
I mean, that brings up a topic of the methyl tetrahydrofolate, right? The MTHFR gene. I see people dreading the gene. My gosh, you know, I get the emails all the time. Well, I have the MTHFR gene, you know, as if they're doomed. You know, my thing is look, it's 15-20% of the population have this SNP on the gene, and yet the body, and they're fine. The body figures ways around it. And Meredith, I want to do a whole show on this eventually. So what you're saying, interestingly enough, too, is, you know, possibly what does the body do with the folate is the interesting question.
Yeah, you know, they don't fully know.
Right. That's what I said. This is a very complicated topic. You know, I am homozygous MTHFR, and I, you know, really never had the typical methylation issues, even when though I had toxic issues. So it's a topic that I really think that we need a lot more research on, because I believe that the body will figure out ways around these genetic SNPs. And, you know, folate, like you explained, is a very complicated topic just from a nutrient level.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. But, so go ahead, Meredith. I can tell you have a question.
Oh, well, just, yeah, one more too. I was just kind of thinking as well, just as far as back to the food cravings go, the impact of exercise and the type that we do and the intensity, would that have any effect on our food cravings?
Probably, because, you know, there's all different types of exercise and you know, energy expenditure. Admittedly, I'm not a huge expert on that. I do a lot of walking. That's my main type of exercise. So that's one area, unfortunately, I don't tend to think about that often. But, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Great.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that when we discuss, you know, when we look at this topic, you know, we know, you know, psychological cravings, there's obviously physiological cravings, we discuss them all, but, you know, all in all, Dr. Sunny, I mean, you know, what is the best way to make our cravings good? You know, because I think most Americans are stuck with bad cravings from a physiological and a psychological point. So if you had to give, you know, our viewing audience, you know, one general thing to bring yourself to good cravings. I mean, I, like you, I have these things. I know what I'm craving. You know, my cravings are real. I'm dialed in with my innate intelligence. You know, I mean, I vary my diet. I get what my body needs based on the cravings. It's because I've been eating a diet for so long that's good. But what's your advice?
My advice first is to actually get on a diet that's good. And it's really, I mean, it takes some commitment, but it's easy if you think about it. I'm not sure what keeps people from doing this. You know, sometimes people will go for, you know, certain fad diets or say, oh, I should avoid fat, which isn't really a good idea in a, you know, general sense. I mean, I think if you follow the two rules of, you know, certified organic or all the foods follow the legal organic criteria, and that's pretty much the only kind of stuff you'll put in your mouth, you know, and these criteria are, for example, no synthetic herbicides, no antibiotics, and there's a symbol to look out for. People don't know about, you know, that there is a symbol on these foods or food products that mean organic. They should first look up what that means. So, you know, I only eat organic food. That's rule number one for me. And then rule number two is, with rare exceptions, like if you want a little oil and vinegar on your salad, just, you know, exceptions like that, whole plants and whole animals, except obviously, you know, plant parts that are poisonous, which can happen. Whole plants and whole animals, that way you're, you know, getting the right proportions of nutrients. So two rules, organic and whole foods. And then, yeah, rule number three, follow your cravings. If you're doing those first two things, the craving should be reliable.
I love that. Yeah, so three rules, right? Yeah, and you're right. Those ratios and proportions are very important, because when they're off, you start to, you know, go in different directions in at the cellular level. So, yeah, those three things, I love it. The third one, you only follow your cravings when you're doing the first two.
Yeah.
Great advice.
And it is so easy for people to forget those first two rules.
Yeah.
I said those three rules to one of my students once, and, you know, just in order, it only took me 3 seconds to tell her the three rules. And right after rule number three, follow your craving, she looked at me and said, "Oh, so that means I should eat donuts and pizza?" Yeah. I said, "What did I just say? Yeah. What were the first two rules? A donut, even if it was organic, it's not a whole food." I have yet to make an organic donut.
Habits are when your brain starts to, your psychology, your thoughts and your brain start to equal your body. When these two are unequal, that's a new habit. So you might want to give it 21 days to 30 days to these two equal out, and then trust your cravings, because what first, right? You're going to start doing these things. Okay, I'm following the first two, but I'm still craving, you know, my jelly donuts or whatever the heck you're craving.
Yeah.
Your Coke. Give it 21 days to 30 days to create this equaling this, which is a new habit, and then I think you're safe on following rule number three. So that's great. Well, Meredith, do you have any follow-up questions?
No, I mean, I just say I'd have to agree. I know in my past when I standard American diet, I had cravings like crazy all the time. But since changing my diet and really exclusively focusing on whole foods, lots of plants and whole animals, really, I have very few cravings. So I'm wondering, too, I guess I'm thinking to myself, I have so few cravings, is there something wrong there? Should I be having some cravings? I noticed a dramatic decrease in cravings since massively increasing the fat in my diet. So what do you have to say about that?
The fats, well, see, if you're getting the fats from whole plants and whole animals, like an avocado or, you know, organic chicken skin that you just baked, it's probably because, well, especially if you have healthy mitochondria and can use those fats for energy, you're probably getting also a lot of the fat-soluble vitamins, and that's what your body's really after. So you crave fat less. If you get fat without those fat-soluble vitamins with it, you know, just refined fat, for example, in fast food, your body thinks it needs more because it feels bad because the vitamins aren't there.
I think that's the original point you made. And Meredith, I would say that you're pretty balanced, right? You're saying, hey, should I be craving some of the things? No, I think that you're pretty, you know, you're pretty balanced. That's why you're not craving certain things. And, you know, I think the important part of it is that, yeah, you know, we can crave certain things that, you know, salts, sugars, fats, and if there's no nutrients involved, we're creating deficiencies. We're satisfying our brain. This is not equaling this, right? We're satisfying the dopamine, getting the rush, and doing our addictions, and we're developing sickness at the cellular level. Eating whole foods, you know, the way we're talking about, protects us. These ratios, the fat ratios, the nutrient ratios, are all in balance. Therefore, you're not going to get cravings, Meredith, right, Sunny?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's exciting, too, because it's empowering that people no longer have to be victims or slaves to their cravings, that if you shift over your diet, get the right amount of, you know, whole foods, you know, whole plants, whole animals, the right amount of fat, that you don't have to have these crazy cravings that can make your life miserable. And a lot of people are dealing with that. So there is a choice.
Well, yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Sunny. You know, we've had a lot of suggestions to do a show on cravings, you know, because a lot of people have them, and it's why they fail on diets or vice versa. So, you know, give it 30 days, folks. Follow her two rules, three rules. Give it 30 days doing her two rules, and then apply the third.
Which is a lot more fun.
Which is a lot more fun. Yeah, so, well, that's great. I think it was some great advice there. So thank you, Professor, for joining us. And, hey, we're so glad to have you on our team as far as when we need some things researched. Meredith, that's who you fired off of, our biochemist psychologist. So
it's a good combination.
It is a great combination for our show because we know that this controls this and this feeds back into this. So thank you. And you're welcome again on the show. So thank you, Dr. Sunny. Thank you, Meredith.
Well, thank you, Dr. Pompa. Thank you, Dr. Sunny. Remember, everyone, just to recap, organic food only, whole foods and whole animals as much as possible. Then you follow your cravings. So thanks so much, Dr. Sunny, Dr. Pompa. Wonderful as always. Everyone have a great week, and we will catch you next week for episode 104. We're going to be interviewing Dr. Jeff Bolick, and we're going to be talking about low-carbohydrate fueling for athletes. It's going to be an awesome show, so all you athletes out there, stay tuned for next week, and have a great weekend. Thanks for watching.
Possible. I do it. Wait till you hear the science. Talk to you next week. Bye.
See ya.
The information shared on today's show can be accessed through our websites, drpompa.com and revelationhealth.com. This Cellular Healing TV episode and past shows are also available for download on iTunes. Help others get real health solutions by liking, reviewing, and sharing our podcasts.